Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. Now, please join me in welcoming my special guest co-host, a man who is known as the pirate-killing sniper of the education policy community, Andy Samarick.
Indeed. Wow. Happy tax day, Mike.
Hello. Happy tax day to you, Andy. Are you joining one of those silly tea parties?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm following the Joe Biden model here. I feel extra patriotic today.
Ah, paying taxes is patriotic.
Absolutely.
So, Andy, you know, this pirate thing, last week I was complaining that I had gotten bumped from Fox News because of the pirates. But after the way this whole thing finished, I mean, it did turn out to be quite an exciting story. And I'm feeling not as bad about getting bumped by the pirates after all.
People love pirates. No, that story was riveting. I mean, the way the whole thing played out. God bless the American SEALs.
Yeah. A little bit about Andy here. You know, if those of you that read the Flypaper blog, and if you don't read the Flypaper, I don't know what's going on out there.
Yeah.
It's riveting. Talk about riveting. Almost as exciting as the pirate story on a daily basis. You've been a new addition to the blog. It's been a very welcome addition. We've heard from many readers about how much they like your writing. But let's talk a little bit about your background here. So you came straight out of the Bush administration.
I did. I worked at the Department of Education for the last little stretch. And before that, I had been working for the Domestic Policy Council.
That's right. As a White House fellow.
As a White House fellow. Best program ever. You guys should look it up.
Now, this is a program that, among other people, Colin Powell did when he was younger. Now, and one of the cool things that you get to do as a White House fellow, right, is at some point they fly you out onto an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, I got to spend 2 days on the USS George Washington out in parts unknown of the Atlantic. Pretty exciting.
Wow.
No pirates out there, though.
I was going to say, did they train you in these SEAL techniques of how to take down a pirate?
Interesting story. One of my colleagues, who was a White House fellow the same year, actually got captured by pirates when he was off the coast of Africa.
Are you serious?
True story, like 8 years ago. Wow. We should bring him in and talk to you sometime.
Wow. Well, one other thing about Andy is you have actually run for office a couple of times.
I ran for office. I like to think of it as a youthful indiscretion, mm-hmm. one of those mistakes not to go back and do again. No, it was a good time. I ran in Maryland in District 30 near Annapolis for the state legislature.
Yeah. And I have to say, as Andy's friend, I knocked on some doors for Andy and got chased by some dogs and things like that.
Yeah, apparently we crunched the data and you only cost me 500 votes, apparently.
Okay, good. Yeah, they would ask me about your positions and I just sort of, you know, I freelanced a little bit. My position. Somehow I think that, you know, I don't know, what people want to hear in Tacoma Park, Maryland, where I live, and Annapolis, Maryland, where you live, seem to be very different.
Yeah, the letters that I got was, why is this guy talking to us about pirates?
Okay, well, enough banter. Let's get going. We've got a lot to cover today. By the way, listeners, Andy is filling in because Rick is out in San Diego at the AERA meeting, American Education Research Association. Rick does not actually attend sessions. He is sitting at a bar, and people rotate through and entertain him. This is what he does. But it's very productive. This is how Rick ends up getting to know so many people in the research world, hiring people to write his books for him. Okay, here we go. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear the Research Minute and then Rate That Reform. Christina, get us started.
Topic 1. The fate of the District of Columbia's school voucher program is still hanging in the balance. In the latest turn, the Department of Education last week rescinded scholarship offers to 200 low-income families. How's this story going to end? And will evidence play a role, or is this all about politics?
Andy, you first.
Well, no, evidence isn't going to matter at all. People are dug in. They already know how they feel about this. The only thing that's going to matter at this point, I think, is old school politics, protesting. The D.C. advocates, I don't think, have been tough enough when it comes to pushing the decision makers on this. I think they try to do a lot of things diplomatically, try to convince and cajole Fenty and some congressional leaders that they ought to do the right thing, and it didn't work. I think the only thing that's going to make a difference at this point, the only thing that would save the program probably, is if there were protests outside of Durbin's office or outside of Fenty's office, or if there were protests outside of maybe a school or two.
So Durbin being the now senior senator from Illinois, who has been the one most vocally against this program and having some power as the chair of the D.C. Approves Committee.
Correct.
Right, Mayor Fenty, who has been a little waffling on whether or not he supports this program, but doesn't seem to be spending any political capital. Look, I think this is turning into Vietnam. It's a tiny program. It doesn't seem on its face to be all that strategically important, obviously incredibly important to those kids and their families. Yet you've got these big forces lining up to fight this fight here. On the one hand, the teacher unions that seem to be, I mean, putting everything into trying to kill this tiny little program, clearly pushing Democrats on the Hill to go to the mat. On the other hand, you know, you've got the Wall Street Journal editorial page. You've got all the school choice folks, you know, also fighting on the other side to try to keep this program alive. Meanwhile, Arne Duncan getting caught in the quagmire. I mean, very brave a few weeks ago, saying that, you know, coming out in the middle of the congressional discussions, saying, hey, you know what, I really think that we should do what we can to protect the kids currently in the program. That, I understand, made the Democrats on the Hill angrier than you can imagine, right? And then, now, last week, sort of backing down and saying, well, we're not going to give any new scholarships out this year, even though we got plenty of money to do it, even though we already told 200 kids they were getting scholarships. So he's getting drawn into this quagmire. You can see the Obama team trying to do their middle-of-the-road thing here. They had an opportunity when the new research came out to say, hey, this is interesting. Maybe this program works, and we're going to do the postpartum thing and support it after all. I think that they've missed that opportunity. Okay, question number two.
Last week, on his trip overseas, President Obama, in the words of Charles Krauthammer, quote, indicted his own people for arrogance, for dismissiveness and derisiveness, for genocide, for torture, for Hiroshima, for Guantanamo, and for insufficient respect for the Muslim world. Is this sending a bad message to America's school children? Should Obama be doing more to stress what makes America great, encouraging the teaching of patriotism in our schools?
Well, first of all, I read Obama's speech from Prague, and I didn't see the self-flagellation that Krauthammer was talking about, so maybe there were some other speeches. If we can just stipulate, concede up front that maybe the president said those things. You know, you could argue this either way. I mean, it's true that America has done some things in the past that we should be ashamed of, slavery and segregation, and even in wartime, we've been known to do some inappropriate things, Alien and Sedition Act, in
Japanese internment
in World War II. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't, you know, hide from that. And we certainly shouldn't hide that stuff from our students. The interesting question, and there are wiser people than me on this issue, should the president go overseas and parade around our sins to foreign audiences? Well, you know, maybe it doesn't do any harm. Maybe it's unseemly. Maybe it thaws relations.
But Andy, this is a question that has been at the heart of curricular battles around history forever in our schools. And the question is, I mean, there's always the questions of how do you portray history accurately as possible? Because, of course, there are different interpretations about history. Can you try to, you know, as kids get older and into high school, show both sides of any debate? You know, and that's, of course, appropriate. But another question is, do our schools have a patriotic mission to teach love of country, to teach that not only are we just any other country or, hey, kids, you happen to be born in the United States. And so, you know, but to say there is something special about our country, and particularly because we are a country that's built on principles and constitutions, you know, we're not based on ethnic bonds. It is important for children to understand what makes America great so that they will grow up and defend and protect our values and our principles, on and on and on.
If I can add just one other thing, the thing that I find kind of interesting about this is if you just kind of blow off and say, okay, Hiroshima was a huge error, it's going to be a stain on the American fabric forever, it actually robs kids, especially high school students, of the interesting debate of what it means to be a leader in a democracy. So if you were to give students all the information that Truman had in advance of his decision, at the same time give them the moral framework to make these decisions, you actually see that these decisions are tough, and it's not just a simple decision to say, oh, America is sinful, it's wrong. So it's bad for high school students.
All right.
Last one. Schools in Tucson, Arizona are wondering if they might be able to get by without principals as a cost-saving measure. Is this an idea worth pursuing?
This is a great idea. Fantastic. I mean, look, well, you know, actually, this was an interesting article. It cited, somewhat incorrectly, but it meant to cite an Education Next article that has recently come out about some of these charter schools in Minnesota and Wisconsin that are teacher-run charter schools. They don't have any principals. Now, these schools tend to be tiny, and I think for tiny schools, you can make an argument that, no, you don't need a principal, that you could have teachers play many of those roles themselves. For bigger schools, I think, you know, you do need a leader in this role, but it could be argued that we don't need as many vice principals as some schools have. And if we're trying to look to tighten our belts, that, you know, looking at some administrators that maybe have been put in administrative positions because they actually weren't very good teachers, find ways to kind of let go of, trim that fat might be a good idea.
Well, in general, every great school I've ever been in, especially the high-performing, low-income schools, have a great, huge, high-energy, tough principal. So in general, I think you need good principals to run good schools. You're right, there are these small niche schools up in the upper Midwest that have done otherwise. But in order to have that type of program, you have to be very careful, conscientious when you put the program together. And if you're a state who's thinking about getting rid of principals for cost-cutting measures, I have a sneaking suspicion you're not going to go about the process conscientiously and carefully. So rate me against this one.
Andy, all right. That's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now time for us to be joined by our lovely research director, Amber Winkler. Amber, you know, it's been kind of gray and rainy and chilly here in Washington, and I just get the sense that this is kind of taking its toll on you.
But actually, I have good news. We have a new. As my time started.
Oh, good news about research.
Good news about research.
Okay.
We have the first study of Teach for America conducted at the high school level. This was by Urban Institute in Calder. It's a sort of an update of the 2007 study. Additional data. They fixed some methodological concerns some folks had. Bottom line, they used longitudinal data from end of course tests in North Carolina from 2000 to 2007 from 23 school districts, and basically found that student performance when you had a TFA teacher compared to a non-traditional teacher was much greater. So in fact, when you have a TFA teacher, that exceeded the impact of additional years of experience, meaning if you had a TFA teacher, you were it's 2 to 3 times better than if you don't, and if you have a teacher instead with 3 to 5 years of experience. So TFA trumps experience is essentially what the study says. Positive results held across multiple subjects, especially strong in math and science. The study reinforces the findings from the 2007 study, as well as the randomized study done by Mathematica at the elementary level, which showed TFA teachers also performed in math. So bottom line, maybe we need to be more concerned about recruitment than retention.
All right. Very well said. Now, let me ask you about this, Amber. This is interesting. So it does make some intuitive sense that Teach for America teachers who come in with very strong subject matter knowledge would be most effective at the high school level, where that subject matter knowledge matters more, you could argue, than it does at the elementary school level. I mean, so when you look across the TFA studies, I mean, is it fair to say that the effect of these TFA teachers is much stronger in the high school level than at the elementary?
Well, this is the only study ever done at the high school level.
But when we think about the ones at the elementary, I mean, the elementary school findings seem to be more that the TFA teachers are just as good as
their peers. Except Mathematica, which showed there, but, you know, there's a strong significant effect in math, which is important. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, the fact that this is at the high school level and, you know, it's good data in terms, I mean, North Carolina's, you know, got great data in terms of linking students and teachers. So fairly reliable. And a lot of things that they did this time addressed, you know, they originally the What Works Clearinghouse said they approved it, but they had some concern. So it didn't get the highest rating, you know, but they tried to address some of those concerns this time around. So
you know, the thing that interests me about this is, is it possible TFA is just getting better? They've been around now for 10, 15 years. If you look at the charter sectors that are mature now in urban areas in Boston, in Washington, D.C., and in New York City, their scores are much better than the traditional sector just because they've had more time to go about this. So is there any reason to believe that TFA is just getting better, more experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a plausible theory. I know that we actually have a few TFA alumni in our Fordham Fellows Program, and they tell us that they are doing a better job following up with them throughout the year, you know, where initially it was maybe more summer, you know, training, and they are developed their model even more to do more follow-up and that sort of thing. So yeah, I mean, certainly the model could have strengthened.
So I mean, my question is, should we just say, look, Teach for America should recruit people to go into high schools and forget about elementary schools? I mean, we don't tend to have teacher shortages at the elementary school level. We tend to have a lot more shortages at high school level in math and science, middle school too. Right. I mean, is that where we should focus the energy of TFA?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd hate to lose them at the elementary level, too. I mean, I don't know. Do we have to do an either or? I mean,
well, the interesting thing would be look at the selection bias. Is there a difference between the TFAers who go into elementary and middle schools and the ones who go into high schools? Are they selecting themselves in different ways that we hadn't guessed before?
Thought about.
Or do they have even have a choice? I mean, I'm not sure that they... get to decide where they're going to go.
Well, Mike, let me ask you, given that TFA is showing these positive results, why doesn't Boston want them to come in? Could you explain that
to me?
That's
a good question. That's right. We remember that, we talked about this before, that Boston has given the Heisman to Teach for America. Well, this is politics, Andy. Politics, that terrible field that you have spent some time in. Okay, Amber, so what is the song that goes along with this
study? Well, you know, it's strange because we're talking a lot about patriotism today, uh-huh. and I thought Teach for America is about serving our high-need uh-huh. schools, and it's tax day. Mm-hmm. So we have a patriotic song, America, by Lee Greenwood.
My native country, thee, land of the noble free, thy name, my love.
Okay, so it's a little slow.
Oh,
it's a little slow, but, you know, we're trying to get the patriotism vibe going today.
Can I ask, you came in, you were introduced to Fiona Applesog. Do I have that right? How did that come about? Did you choose that? That's pretty hip.
Laura, our new media director, always helps me with my musical choices. So
yes, but you know, but Amber is country at heart. Is that fair to say?
I am country at heart.
Well, very nice. Very nice, Amber.
Thank you.
Well, it's exciting that Teach for America doing so well.
It is, and the neat thing about this, I think, is that it's not as though they've become more selective over time. Mm-hmm. They have, 5,000 folks are part of their core now, so they keep getting better in quality as they scale up.
Yeah.
Important lesson for other things.
They were even mentioned this Sunday in a Frank Rich column in the New York Times, known as a very liberal columnist. He was talking about how, you know, horrible the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years have been, all these people going in trying to make money. And now we need a new ethos of people doing service. And he conceded that, well, at least there are these people going in to Teach for America, and that's a good thing. Although, you know, we really all know that they're just intending to become investment bankers afterwards.
But egad.
Anyways, Teach for America, part of the culture now.
With such a bad economy, Teach for America is getting even more popular. So.
Well, they're recruiting more people, but the question is whether they're going to be able to place these people. Or if more school districts give them the Heisman. But that voice you hear is the voice of Stafford Palmieri and the voice
Hello.
Of reason.
I am the voice of reason.
Hey, Stafford.
So, Stafford, you're going to rate that reform. What are we rating today? Oh, ooh.
There's more dancing in the Gadfly podcast than I expected.
Andy, no talking over the music.
It's because Rick likes to raise the roof. Which
oh no
is oh yes so today I have a rather amusing story, although slightly unfortunate, but there were two students who thought that their teacher was unfairly sending them to the school office. You know, they were just kidding when they lobbed that textbook at her head, right? Well, anyway, they wanted to get back at her, so why not take a page straight out of a 19th century medical textbook? Well, that's what these two enterprising teenagers from Seattle did. The two spiked their teacher's first period coffee with syrup of Ipecac. As one would expect, after ingesting said substance, the teacher found herself making friends with the school toilet about 45 minutes later. Now, parents used to keep Ipecac, which is made from the roots of an obscure South American plant, in the medicine cabinet in case their children ingested something that they shouldn't. This is because Ipecac is an emetic and causes violent vomiting. Yes. Unfortunately, the CDC has recommended removing Ipecac from the home for at least 50 years, since it's really easy to overdose and has some nasty side effects. And that's probably why these two kids are going to jail.
Whew. Going to jail.
Jail?
Yeah.
They poisoned somebody,
Andy.
They've
gotten charged with attempted poisoning.
They've attempted? Succeeded.
Yeah. Well, she went to the hospital and they pumped her stomach and she's fine now.
Wait, what part of this was amusing?
This is a reform?
Okay, well, so rate that reform is a loose term. as I was actually going to point out, I know I'm supposed to be grading the official district school reform, whatever's going on here. So I gave them a B+ for sending these kids, for coming down harshly on these kids, because this is kind of a serious thing to do.
Yeah.
But I was left with a couple of questions, which is, one was, how did the kids actually spike her coffee? I mean, is the woman blind? I'm not totally clear on how they got up to her desk and
Stafford. Now, this is where you're going to get into dangerous territory
as a non-former
teacher.
I'm just curious.
Have you been in a classroom with 30 kids?
I have student teaching. I've been in a class with 30 kids.
Right.
I have. It's true. But I'm just curious how they got up to her desk and got the Ipecac into her coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ipecac tastes disgusting, so I'm curious how she didn't taste it. Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious why these parents or one set of the parents, had Ipcacs still in their house. What is this, the 1950s? And
these are reasonable questions. Whew, you know, this has been, now that we've been doing the show for a while, I feel like we keep hearing stories like this over and over. I mean, we've had the stories of the kids putting, you know, things in cupcakes and stuff that make people have diarrhea and da da da. I mean, this is a recurrent
that
theme.
That was the cheerleading.
And so I just want to know, if students are listening out here, this is not that creative, folks.
No.
Come on, this has been done before.
Nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new under the sun.
But they don't even really sell syrup of Ipcac anymore. They really don't. You can't find it over the counter.
Interesting. Ipcac. We were talking before the show that, you know, sometimes we have these days and we wonder if anything matters. We, you know, we've been trying the same reforms for 100 years and nothing ever seems to get better. And
Andy blogged about that this morning.
Yeah.
It's true. These reforms come around. I just didn't realize that poisoning teachers comes around, that this is a recurring theme.
I might go take some of that syrup before I get off the show. No, I'm just kidding. All right, everybody. That's all the time we got. Andy, thank you for coming and joining us as our guest host.
It's a blast. Have me back.
We will do that. Keep up the blogging. And folks, check out Andy at Flypaper. And until next time.
Huh?
Who are you?
You want me to dance?
Don't you listen to the podcast?
Till next time, who are you?
I'm Andy Smerick.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net, signing off.